I'm now going to hand the meeting over to Simon, who's going to share some of his experience of public information.
My name's Simon, I'm an addict.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Thanks, Lorna. I identify a lot, you know, and the bit of your story at the beginning is really like my story at the beginning. And I was in an institution when I first heard about, actually not the first time I heard about Narcotics Anonymous, but the first meeting I went to was in an institution. And this guy, his name was Mickey actually, he came down on a Sunday night to this institution in the middle of nowhere and told his story. And I'm pretty certain that he had no idea I existed. I don't think he knew my name. We were never introduced. And I only found out afterwards that his name was Mickey, and he's dead now, because he relapsed and died within a couple of days. But what he did was give me an opportunity to have a moment of clarity. I feel really fortunate that the first time I heard this message, I got it. I wouldn't describe myself as lucky, particularly. I don't think luck runs in my family particularly, but I think that I was very lucky that day because I was ready. You know, I was ready to hear this. And he told a story, his using story, and he'd used, you know, this guy was, as they say in America, he was a proper hope to die dope fiend. And this was a real story. And he talked about being clean, and I'd never met anyone. I'd never heard anyone talking who'd used like I'd used and who'd stopped. I'd just never met anyone. And if I had, I think I might have stopped before. And anyway, I heard this, and what I remember was having a moment of realization where it was almost like I had a conversation inside of myself. And what I found myself saying was, I never wanted to use. It wasn't my plan, you know, when I was 11 or 12 years old, it wasn't my plan to be 28 years old and having used, intravenously for several years every single day. That wasn't the plan. And I realized that I desperately wanted to stop. And up until that point, I'd wanted to stop hurting. I'd wanted to stop the old bill looking for me. I'd wanted to stop being short of money. I'd wanted to stop begging people who I didn't like to give me drugs or credit. You know, I spent a lot of time with people who I really didn't like because of what they had. And I wanted all that to stop. And what I realized during that meeting was that all of this stuff was about drugs. So I did what was suggested. You know, I kind of stuck my head down, knuckled down, and took suggestion. And the suggestions that were offered to me then are the same suggestions I would offer you today. There are five of them. And they are, go to meetings, get clean, get a sponsor, work the steps, do service. That's it. And if you do those things to the best of your ability, you will find freedom from addiction. That's a guarantee. And I'm living proof of that, and I would suggest that you are too. I want to try really hard and focus on PI, and whilst I'm conscious that the people who really should be hearing this are all the ones out there in the corridors chatting to their mates, rather than sitting in the meeting, I will do my best to let go of that as a resentment. Because I spend a lot of time in PI talking, you know, singing to the choir. You know, PI workshops tend to be in little rooms at conventions talking to people who are interested in PI. And they tend to be the people who already know the stuff that's being said. And whilst I really applaud the London Convention for main staging our services, I think every meeting should be about this, really. Because the fact is that, Narcotics Anonymous' mission statement is that no addict seeking recovery need die without knowing about Narcotics Anonymous. And I very nearly died without knowing. And I know lots of people who did. And as we are sitting in this meeting for an hour and a half, especially in this part of town, there will be a lot of people walking past the front of this building, desperate to stop, not knowing we're in here, not knowing who we are, not knowing they got a choice. And I'm not going to swear. I'm really going to try hard not to swear. But that is a tragedy, really. It's an absolute outrage. And it's an outrage because we've got 750 meetings in the UK. And we've got 300 and something meetings in London. And there are people walking around who don't know about us. And I think that's an outrage. And what I've learned to do in Narcotics Anonymous is, you know, the first expression that I learned to use from my first sponsor was, I am responsible. Because from the moment I got this, from the moment I got clean and I came into recovery and I started going to meetings and I committed myself to Narcotics Anonymous, I become responsible for my life. You know, I'm powerless and I need to work the steps and I need to do service and I need to go to meetings. But I'm responsible now. And a part of that responsibility for me is to give back what was given to me. People do what people do, and you know, I'm happy that they're happy. But what works for me is to give this stuff back. And I was about, I think, 29 or 30 days clean when someone took me to my first area committee meeting. And I was a bit like one of them clockwork mice, you know, just people, someone just wound me up and stuck me down, and I just ran off doing this stuff. And a part of the reason was I was desperate to belong. You know, I'd spent a lifetime of not belonging anywhere, of feeling an outsider everywhere I was. You know, I spent 8 years at a boarding school, and every day, I wanted to leave. And I was in my late 20s before I realized that I could have run away. You know what? It never crossed my mind that I could have run away. Because I just never thought about it. And I sat there in misery all that time. And what happened when I walked into my first knock, I think probably the first meeting I walked into, at the end of the meeting, people came up and said stuff to me. And one of the things they said was, keep coming back. And people didn't say that to me, is the truth. I remember people leaning out of their window of their flat. I'd knock on the door and they'd lean out the window and say, no, mate, you can't come in. You know, they wouldn't even come to the door. And I remember watching people, as I was walking down the street, see me and turn around and face the shop window and watch my reflection in the shop window so they didn't have to make eye contact because they knew I was going to hit them for money. And they'd wait until I'd gone past and they'd carry on. And I know they did that. I mean, I know I was paranoid, but I know that they used to do that. And you know what? If I'd known me, I'd have done it. And the fact is, I did do it for a lot of people. Because I was trouble. You know, I was a bit of a twat, really. I wasn't particularly dangerous. I had a big opinion of myself. But I was really just chaotic. You know, I was just, my life was just about chaos. And when I arrived in Narcotics Anonymous, I brought all of that with me. And what you gave me an opportunity to do was to put some order to that. You know, you led me through the first part of my recovery by saying, what you've got to do tomorrow is go to a meeting and not use. And I could do that, so I did. And I got to this service meeting and there were, I think, eight, or I don't remember exactly, something like 7 or 8 positions vacant. And I took all of them. And because no one else stuck their hand up. And I thought, I'll do that, I can do that. It's a bit like that Harry Enfield thing, you know, gets a job, I can do that, I can do that. Because I could. And I wanted to, and I wanted to belong, and I wanted people to not say, you know what, can you just go away? Because I thought if I did stuff, people wouldn't say that. So I took on all these positions, and people who have been around for a while just kind of smiled and let me do it. Because that's how we do stuff in NA. You know, we do our best not to tell people what to do, and we just let them work it out for themselves. And over time, I let go of all of that stuff except for a couple of things. And one was the helpline, and the other was PI, public information. And I still do public information, and I've been doing that for a long time now. And I think that what we try and do in public information is develop relationships with people who know addicts. You know, the primary function of Narcotics Anonymous is the NA meeting, it's the group, right? So I see the job of public information is to get addicts into meetings. When they're in meetings, that's your job, right? It's our collective job. Once they're in a meeting, then we can carry the message to them. And a lot of what I want to try and do in PI, and we try and do in PI, is get those people to meetings. And one of the ways that we do that is by speaking to professionals who work in the field. You know, whether we like it or not, addictions and recovery from addiction is an industry now. You know, it's a serious business. There's serious money out there involved in this. And not all of the people who work in this industry believe in abstinence, understand the nature of addiction, are in it for anything apart from a steady job and a pension. And I don't mean to criticize them, but I think that they may have a different take on the disease of addiction than we do. So a part of what I think is really important for us to do is to carry this message to people who meet addicts. There's absolutely no reason why it needs to be me who delivers this message to an addict. Anyone can deliver this message to an addict. Anyone can give an addict a pamphlet talking about Narcotics Anonymous. You know, am I an addict? Needs to be commonly available to every single person out there with a drug problem. Because, you know, our mission is that every addict needs to know about us. Because I've never met an addict who hasn't had a moment when they wanted to stop using. I mean, they may not want to stop every second of the day, but my experience was that I wanted to stop a lot, and then it would pass as soon as I heard about someone who had a bit of gear. That was the deal, you know, and my drug of choice, for what it's worth, was your drugs. You know, I wasn't choosy about drugs. I wanted your drugs. I was your mate until your drugs were gone, and then I'd go and do mine on my own. Because if you were, you know, willing or keen enough or stupid enough to share your drugs with me, I was your mate. And when they were gone, I'd go and do mine on my own. I didn't really share my drugs with people. I just thought that was kind of foolish, really. One of the things I heard this earlier on this year, and I know that within Narcotics Anonymous we don't take roles and we don't keep attendance registers, and as a result of that we don't really have particularly accurate numbers about anything in NA. Although you will see flyers around today for a survey. We've been running a survey in NA for a few years now to try and get some of those numbers together. But one of the statistics that's come out of the World Service Office recently is that of those people who attend one NA meeting, 5% will achieve long-term recovery. That's 5 people out of every 100 who walk into one NA meeting. And whilst that's, 5 people more than nobody, that's not very good. But another statistic that I think is really important is that about 90% of the service effort in Narcotics Anonymous is done by approximately 5% of the membership. Right? And I don't think that those two are disconnected. I think they are absolutely tied together. And what that says is that those 5% who do lots of service are the 5% who achieve long-term recovery. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that those people who get involved in service and maintain service as an integral part of their recovery will stay clean for a long time. And, the only proof I've got for that is the fact that I know lots of people in this room who do service. And of all the people who got clean when I got clean, in my clean date is the 20th of December 1985, the people who got clean around me then, the ones who are still clean now, all got involved in service. And that's why I do it. I do it because I don't, as much as anything, because I don't want to go back out there. You know, I go to enough meetings and listen to enough addicts talking about what it's like out there to not ever want to go back. You know, when people started coming into NA talking about crack cocaine, there wasn't crack cocaine when I got clean. People started talking about ecstasy. There wasn't ecstasy when I got clean. And I must say, I was a bit gutted because I thought, I felt like I was an expert on drugs and I tried every drug there was, right? And people came in talking about drugs I hadn't taken. And, you know, for a moment I thought, you know, maybe. But, you know, I learned really early in my recovery that what I need to do is stick with winners, you know. And that means going to lots of meetings and doing lots of service. But for me, the winners are the people who do stuff, right, as opposed to just talk about stuff. And I've always tried to do stuff. I believe I have a right to moan about people not doing stuff if I'm doing it. If I'm not doing it, I don't have a right to moan. And anyone who knows me knows that I like to moan. And what I've learned about, you know, what's happened here in recovery in the last, you know, bit more than 20 years is that I've learned to understand myself a bit. I've learned to work out a little bit about who I am and what makes me tick. And the fact is, I'm, you know, inside I'm 6'3" and very handsome and about 28. The reality is that I'm not that, you know, and I can be honest about that, and I can find that funny now. And I've learned that actually I'm pretty bad tempered and I'm pretty negative, and I don't suffer fools gladly. I'm really impatient, and whilst I would like not to be those things, I am. You know, my sponsor said to me, working the steps is a little bit like establishing where you are on a map. The reason we do a fourth and a fifth step is to work out where we are. Because, you know, someone can give me a map, and if I don't know where I am, the map's useless. I can't go anywhere if I don't know where I'm starting from. So what I've learned here is to learn about who I am, and as a result of that, I've tried to go where it is that I want to go. I got involved in public information because I've got a big mouth, frankly, if I'm honest. I like the sound of my own voice, but also because I'm good at this. I think that not everyone is good at doing public information, just as not everyone is good at doing activities and entertainments, and not everyone is good at doing conventions, and, you know, not everyone is good at being a treasurer. But what I've learned since I've been here is lots of skills. You know, what I think is really important about recovery is to have a go at something. And I've tried a load of different things since I came into NA, and I've tried to allow myself, when people say, would you come and do this? I've tried to go, all right, and I'll try it. And if I don't like it or I don't think I'm any good at it, I'll stop doing it. And I've learned what I'm not good at. I mean, I think what's happened in lots of ways is that I've learned as much about what I'm not as about what I am. And I think that's important. You know, I've learned that I'm not 6'3". I'm a short ass, you know. And I've learned that I'm not very patient. But what's come with that is an understanding of how I improve that. You know, I got taught really early in my recovery, that I have one opportunity to practice patience. And that's when I feel impatient. And I think that's like, those situations which I find difficult are actually opportunities for me to practice, you know, to practice this program and to put this stuff, you know, to put this stuff into action. And I try and do that. And the place where I find it probably the most challenging of all is in and around service. You know, I sit in, you know, in PI meetings with four people in a city that has got 350 meetings. You know, and a national PI committee where there are more than 700 groups a week, and we struggle to find people to elect. And I'm not digging at anyone when I say that. That's not my intention. And I don't want to sit up here and like pitch for doing this. Like, you really need to go and do this. I think you really need to find ways to be happy. And that's what I'd encourage you to do. And but I'd also say that some of the best moments I've ever had in my life have been whilst I've been doing service. when I arrived in NA, I was institutionalized. And one of the people in this institution told me to write a list of 10 things that I wanted in my life. And every time I got one, to cross it off and write another thing on the bottom of the list. And I've still got a list of 10 things I want. I'm long past that first 10, but every time I get one, I cross it off and I write another one. And I think that's really, it's been really valuable for me. And the fact is, if I look at the 10 things on that list now, I wouldn't have even thought of writing them. Never would have crossed my mind to put any of them, because I'd never have thought I could possibly have got any of them. And I think what happens is I have learned, I'm learning to set the bar higher all the time. So I get to do stuff and I find I can do it and I can then challenge myself a bit more and do a bit more. And I really think that that's what happens in recovery. And it says in the basic text that our service work is an expression of our personal recovery. So I try and express my personal recovery in my service. You know, I try and encourage and support other people in service, because I think being of service to others is fundamental to my recovery. I think it's probably fundamental to recovery. I think being of service is kind of what I'm here for. I sometimes sit and when I'm, you know, meditating or praying and think about, you know, what's the point of all this? Why am I here? Why is all this happening? Why did I do all of that? And why did I not die when some of my best mates did? And why am I here and not them? Why is that? You know, I at the end of my using, there were four of us. There's three guys and me, two brothers, another guy and me. And they're all dead, the other three. And that's because they all carried on using. And I'm alive because I stopped. The clear implication there is that if I'd carried on using, I'd be dead too, right? And also, if they'd have stopped, maybe they'd still be alive. So, why me out of them? They were good people. They were my friends, you know, and why me? And I think a part of the reason for that is because I was the one who was chosen to do this. And so a part of what I try and do when I do service is honour them. You know, I regularly remember them. You know, when I go back to my family home, I go to where they are and honour them, because you know, without them I wouldn't be who I am. And not just them, but all of those people, when we have that moment silence before meetings or at the end of meetings before the Serenity Prayer, to remember those people who've not made it, you know, I do my best to remember them. And I do this for them as much as I do for me. One of the things that I wrote on my list was that I wanted to travel. I had this mate when I was using, and I used to live in a town about 50 miles north of London, and we set off to go around the world, right from this town, and we ended up in a squat in Archway, where I stayed for about a year, doing speed every day, and that's as far as I got. You know, I didn't get any further than that, and eventually, you know, we fell out, and he went off, and I ended up on my own, living in a cupboard in this squat in Archway. It's quite a big cupboard, but it nevertheless was a cupboard. And since I've been in recovery, I've visited 67 countries. And almost all of those have been as a result of service or going to a convention or being invited by someone in recovery to go and visit their family or something like that. In January, I went to Iran. There was a guy who came to my home group who was Iranian, who was living in England, and he got clean, you know, as a result of my home group. As a result of Narcotics Anonymous, but the place he did that was in my home group. And after a year or so, he said, you know, you should come to visit Iran, you should see Iran. And I thought, you know what, yeah, I will. And I don't know how much you know about NA in Iran, but there are at present 6,000 groups every week in Iran. It's the fast, by absolutely without a shadow of a doubt, the fastest growing NA community in the world. I mean, it's growing exponentially. It's, you know, they're talking about it doubling in size in 6 years. I mean, it's just immense. 75% of the fellowship there have less than 3 years clean. People regularly sponsor 100 people because there are no sponsors. There's no one with length of clean time. So they have sponsorship meetings, which are bigger than our normal NA meetings. They had a convention last year, and there were 20. It's a one-day convention. There were 26,000 people there. That's just one town. I mean, it is it is immense. And when I arrived at this, I went to a small town in the south. There were 50 people at the airport to meet me, with flowers, a speech, a photographer, and whilst I need to say that certainly appealed to my sense of self-importance. You know, it felt like, it felt very good. It was also immensely humbling. It was just the most moving experience. And because I hadn't gone on behalf of NA. I'd gone to visit a friend, and word had got out that someone was coming who had more than 20 years clean. And I spoke at meetings a lot, four meetings. I was there for 11 days. I spoke at four meetings. And the last meeting was over 1,000 people in a sports hall. And I'll tell you what, it's probably the most surreal. I've had some pretty surreal experiences in my life. But sitting in a sports hall with 1,000 Iranian men, right? You know, that's 1,000 dark-haired men with moustaches staring at you. I don't mean to caricature people, but that tends to be how Iranian men are. Just the most loving people, just so wonderful, so friendly. But it's a surreal experience to sit on a dais and have 1,000 people who look alike looking at you. But, you know, I've learned this in my recovery, to try and step away from my head. Because what happens is I get caught in my head, and it's all about me, right? It's about, they've come to see me. This is because it's me. And they want something from me. And what I've learned to do is to try and step aside from that, because that's what I was taught to do really early in my recovery, to get out of the driving seat and let the car drive itself. You know, my job is to be a vehicle for carrying this message, right? That's my job, and that's my responsibility as an addict, is to carry this message to other addicts. And I was taught to meditate on this idea. What does carrying a message to someone mean, right? It doesn't mean to tell them. It means to carry it to them. And I think that's a really beautiful idea. What that means is that I've got to carry it. And that, you know, it doesn't mean say it; it means carry it. So it's got to be a part of who I am. And I try and remember that when I'm speaking. And so my job is to just get out of the way, because this is not about me. This is about the message. And the message is that an addict, any addict, can lose the desire to use and find a new way of life through Narcotics Anonymous. It's not a complicated message. You know, I'm an intensely complicated person, and that's the problem. The message is actually a very simple message. And how you go about doing that is a whole different matter. And if that's what you want to do, there are plenty of people here who'll help you. And if that fails, read the literature, because it's all in there. You know, it's in the book. All you've got to do is buy that basic text, as it says on the front, basic text rather than blue book or whatever, basic text, and read it, because it's in there. And so I try and get out of the way and carry the message that all you've got to do is turn up. That's it. And if you keep turning up, you will get this. So when I go and talk to, as I do a lot, go and talk to professionals. We've just had a series of meetings with the NTA, which is the National Treatment Agency, which is the kind of part of the NHS. It's the part that deals with institutional treatment in this public treatment in the UK. We've just had a series of meetings with like their board, their management. There's a new drugs policy. I don't know if you know, there's a new national drugs policy out. So we've been inputting into that, talking about that and talking with these people about this stuff. So when I talk to these people, they're not addicts, right? They don't get addiction in lots of ways. They get the harm that addicts cause. They get the fear of addiction. They get the fear that addicts cause. They get the damage that addicts cause to their families and to shops and society. They get that, but they don't really generally get what it feels like to be an addict. You know, how painful it is to be caught in a cycle of addiction where you just can't stop. And it gets so bad you just want to die because you don't think you've got another choice. And you know, my real moment, my pivotal moment in my recovery was crossing a road, seeing a lorry coming and thinking, all I've got to do is take another step. I fought that and I was really close. And I, you know, I'm grateful I didn't. I mean, it's obvious, I guess, that I didn't. And I'm glad that I didn't. Something stopped me doing that. But I remember that feeling and I want to do this for people who get that feeling. Because there is a solution. And we are it. You know, this is the solution. And so when I go and speak to, you know, these are serious bureaucrats, career public servants who are about the bottom line. They're about money, projects, winning arguments with other departments, kind of trophy management issues. They want to own it rather than another department owning the money. That's the kind of stuff they're talking about. It's about, you know, days of our lives only with millions of pounds, right, and other people's lives. Not that that's, I don't mean that to be a judgment. It's meant to be an observation. So when I go and speak to those people, what I've got to do is be really clear and simple about what our message is. And so it's about mixing up a bit of pragmatic stuff about Narcotics Anonymous works. People who come to meetings can genuinely have a chance to completely change their lives and achieve long-term abstinence, right? That's a part of it. The other part of it is mixing up a little bit of me in that, because there's nothing that works better than a bit of personal story. But we have to be a bit careful about how much of that we put in. But you know, I don't know how many of you have done, you know, spoken in public about Narcotics Anonymous or told people you know who aren't addicts about your story. The bit that works is the bit about me, right? And because the fact was that I was within seconds of walking out in front of a lorry because I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do it. I couldn't live life. And what happened when I arrived in Narcotics Anonymous was, without being asked, I was given a second chance. You know, I was offered the opportunity to have another go. And free, without any strings, without any obligation, when I could stay as long as I liked, and all I had to do was just turn up. And if I did that, what was on offer for me was another go. And I came into that second go with all the experience from the first go. You know, I'd made a lot of mistakes and I grasped it with both hands, and I feel very lucky that I did that. And that's the message that I need, I would like, addicts who haven't got this message to get. That it's not about coming into a meeting and someone locking the door and someone getting a tambourine out. You know, it's not about open-toed sandals and socks and everyone clapping along to a song, which is what I thought was going to happen when I came to NA, right? It's not about that. It's about real people finding real solutions to real problems. And the difficulty is that those people that we go and speak to and I go and speak to, those often hard-nosed, cynical professionals, the way that they see us is intensely frustrating. They think that we're religious. They think that we're a cult. We're secretive. We are closed-minded. I think what's important is that those are to some degree true. I mean, I don't think they would think them otherwise. And I think we have to take head on. We have to take that stuff on the nose and deal with it. I think we can go, no, we're not. And that's what we've done. That's what we've always done. And they still think it. So, you know, what we've tried to do over the last couple of years, last 3 years, 4 years, is make that a bit different. And I don't know how many of you know this, but we have a new book, a new service manual out, and it's called the Public Relations Handbook. So what we're trying to do is move beyond public information into public relations, because there are lots of people out there who know about Narcotics Anonymous, right? And the fact is they don't think very good things about us. So our job is to develop relationships with them rather than just tell them. And when I was a part of making the strategic plan for this book in America, and one of the things we talked about at that time was the difference between public information and public relations. And this guy from Texas said, well, the difference between public information and public relations is the difference between a one-night stand and a committed relationship. And you know what? He's bang on. Because what we've always done is gone in, said, this is who we are, this is what we do, and then we're gone. And we then often don't answer the phone, we often don't turn up when we say we will. We're often very flaky. They call up and no one gets back to them. And so they have a right to think what they think. So part of what we're trying to do now is change the culture of the way we do stuff. So we enter into mutual relationships with professionals and professional organizations who work with addicts. So we work with them. We say to them, so what is it that you think about us, and how can we fix that? I think that's really important. I think it's a real leap forward for us as an organization. And I think it shows a degree of maturity that I'm not sure that we've ever really had before. I think it's fantastic that we're starting to identify that part of the problem we have is people think we're secret. And the reason they think we're secret is because they don't know where we are. They don't know where our meetings are. They don't know how to find us. They don't know how to get to a meeting. I think the mistake that we have often made is in appearing to be secret, when in fact what we are is private. I think it's fundamental that we are a private organisation, so that people's anonymity and identity is respected and kept, privileged. But we shouldn't be a secret. Every single person in this country should know where their local Narcotics Anonymous meeting is. Everybody, addict or not. You know, our job will be done when every addict knows about us. And until then, we've got work to do. I've got work to do. And you know, I have a passion for this. And I've often thought, and I wasn't planning to say this, but I've often thought that I may work my recovery through service rather than work my recovery. There it is, out in the world. And I think that I struggle sometimes to be in relationship with you as people, when it's much easier to be in relationship with you as someone in service. You know, I'm clear about that. And I don't particularly like that about myself. And what I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous to do, first off, is to admit it. So a part of, you know, why I said yes to this and decided to say it is because I need to do that. You know, I like my life when I'm sitting in my house with a door closed, with my feet on my table watching football. You know, I'm good there, safe, manageable, not particularly powerless. What I struggle with is when I come out of my house and I have to be around people like you. You know, that's where I struggle. And I think that I've struggled to find myself outside of service. But I'm working on it. I love this program. I am grateful to you for giving me a second chance, because actually that's all I wanted. And I want to state as well that I don't do service to make friends, right? I do service to do service. As a result of doing service, I make a lot of friends and people who love and respect me for the work that I do. I'm not about making friends here. So, and the reason I'm saying that is what's important here is the work for me in service, in PI. What's important is the work. Because the fact is, there's lots to do and not many people doing it. And if you want to do some and you want to step up, then it will be the best thing that you do, I think. I really believe that when I arrived in Narcotics Anonymous, I was just a loser. Because I thought I knew everything. That was the problem. People couldn't tell me anything because I always had an answer. Always had an answer for everyone. And what I learned in Narcotics Anonymous was that I'd reached the end of the road. And since I've been here and since I've done my best to work this program and get involved in Narcotics Anonymous, I've become a winner. And I believe that winners are losers who keep coming back. And if you feel like you're a loser, keep coming back. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Simon.